Welcome to this podcast from Barla McCarthy. We hope you find insight and a catalyst for change in the topics we discuss. Now here is today's presentation.
Gene Hitchcock is a visionary marketing and public relations leader, blending consulting and corporate experience. She has managed, survived, and succeeded through mergers and acquisitions, system rebranding, meaningful use, crises too many to mention, and years of experience working with physicians. This includes her current role as the Interim Vice President of Marketing, Communication, and Physician Relations at Phoenix Children's in Phoenix, Arizona. Given her breadth and depth of leadership experience, I wanted to get insights from Jean on how to build and nurture a solid team. Jean, great to be talking with you today.
Allison, it's so good to see you. It's been a long, long time.
It has. Yeah, this is great. Terrific. And I know you're going to add a lot to this conversation. So we're talking about building and having solid teams. One of the things that strikes me is that's not something that's done accidentally. That's something that's done very intentionally. So Can you talk about that in terms of how you've built teams and the thought process around it?
Sure. It doesn't happen by accident. If it did, we wouldn't have as much disruption in the workplace and other places. I always think about teams. I think about the military, for example. They have to form and norm teams of people who didn't know each other, but they have some common experiences, which is around their training and what have you. So I always approach my teams as I bring them together, and it's usually marketing, communications, creative services, digital, and physician relations. And I try to get a representative from each area, and we draft what is called a commitment to each other. Now, we don't all have to be outgoing. We don't all have to be funny, but they're basically commitments to each other of how we're going to work with each other, you know? I'm going to be transparent in my communications. I'm going to do what I say I do, and I've got your back, and things like this. And we even have some funny ones in there. You know, let's get as much humor in the day as we can, whatever they want, you know, kind of thing. And everywhere I've been, it's really worked well because people start to have discussions around those things, around, well, what is the commitment I'm willing to make to you? And then we start doing things like not shadowing necessarily, but spending time with each other from different areas to understand that the pace in comms is so different than the pace in creative services and vice versa. And so I think, you know, walking in somebody else's shoes also helps. But I can tell you on a sad note is I remember when I left one place that I worked that I loved the team there. And I remember saying to them, this doesn't happen accidentally. What we have here is something very special. And please keep it up after I'm gone, you know. And to this day, they say, we hear what you said, you know, we need to keep track of it and tend it. It's a relationship. So
exactly. You just said it. It needs to be tended because it's a relationship proactively. I'm curious in that exercise of the commitment and throwing those words out, I'm guessing that part of that was conversation about, well, what does that really mean? What does that really look like so people understand it?
It was the behaviors, like having your back means what? And your idea of setting realistic expectations, what does that mean? You know, and they would talk it through. I mean, they would actually, once we started drafting them, they kind of broke out in groups to draft it themselves. And I never get involved. I'm merely the person that brings them together to do it, you know, but it comes from them.
And then do you add to it or they just bring up enough that you're comfortable with the outcome most of the time?
Most of the time I'm pretty comfortable because they've really wrung it out. You know, everybody wants to make sure that the other one understands where they're coming from when you work these sorts of conversations. And I will tell you recently, I had to have a conversation with a team on a very sensitive social justice sort of issue. Not the usual thing you talk about at work, but in our work, you do because of some certain topics that come up in children's healthcare. We had a very open discussion and people were very comfortable saying, well, I don't agree with that, or I guess I can see your point of view. And at the end they said, but this is who we work for. And so we're going to support the position of the company. And I was like, amen, we got it. You know, they brought it full circle They wanted to talk about it and they got it out. But when it was all said and done, they said, if this is in the best interest of the company, we're going to support this. So it worked out beautifully.
And you as the leader, what do you specifically believe you're doing to enable that conversation to be so open and transparent?
Well, there's a kind of a running joke about me that you always know exactly where you stand with Gene. And if I have a fit of pique, as they say, I get it out, I get it over, and I keep going, you know? So they know that I've created an area that's of trust, and it's safe for them to say what they want to say. And it's not going to come back on them. It's not going to show up in a performance review. None of that, you know? And that's part of that working out those commitments, is they get to know people and they start to understand the trust level, and they can call each other out if they don't. I mean, that's the other thing. So we celebrate the wins, you know, like everybody does, but there have been some, we call them autopsies, just because we're in healthcare. When we do a project and someone will say, you know, you didn't give me enough time on that. You know, you really should have told me or something. So in every aspect of what we do, it's safe to say, to express your opinion. And, you know, it's not going to be, there's no retribution or anything.
Yeah. And I was reading recently the book, but Smarter, Faster, Better by Charles Duhigg. He concluded that the key to team effectiveness is psychological safety.
Yes.
Making sure everybody's heard, socially sensitive, demonstrating empathy with one another. Mm-hmm. So clearly you have done that. Tell me, if somebody says something alarmingly and in a group setting in front of you, or something you really disagree with, what's your reaction?
Well, we try not to make it that I disagree with anybody. If we're having a discussion about something, say we're working on a project and I want to go left and they want to go right, I go, well, talk to me. Why do you think that's better? You know, tell me what your thinking is on that. It's never really personal. It doesn't get to that point. Now, we did have some situations because of the pandemic that I had never dealt with. So we've got pretty social people in the fields that I work in, right? And so somebody comes back and says, okay, went to Occ Health, I got COVID, I got to go home and quarantine. So I send out a note to the department saying someone is out and they have COVID and they'll be out for 10 days. And I get an email from HR saying I should not have revealed the diagnosis. I go, she revealed the diagnosis in the office. It was a matter of 10 minutes before it went through everything. But I learned after that. I apologized to her and she said, oh, that's fine, Jean. I thought I told everybody. I go, well, you know, patients, you're our patient now. So, but there were some new things you had to learn with the pandemic.
So versus building the team, when you walked into a team, which is clearly what you did at Phoenix Children's, how do you assess what you have? And if there's things that are not a fit, how do you wrestle with that?
Well, the first thing I do wherever I go in is I meet one-on-one with everybody. And I ask them, you know, what do you like about your job? What do you hate about your job? What do you wish, if you could change one thing, you know, what would it be? And just trying to understand how they're feeling that currently, you know, what's the problem, or what's giving them anxiety or anything like that. And again, outside of the pandemic, because the pandemic, I think, just brought anxiety to everybody, yes, you know, kind of thing. And so I meet with everybody, and then I start to, you start to look at commonalities, you know, like we don't have a long enough lead time. We don't have infrastructure. We don't intake jobs right. Or we need to know who the div chief's admins are because it's so hard to get, you know, whatever it is. And I put it on a list and I go, you know, most of this is really doable. I mean, if you hadn't expressed it before, you've expressed it now, we'll get it cleaned up. Okay. But, and the stuff that's the harder and takes longer is the interpersonal stuff. Yes. So that's when you get them working on these commitments to each other. And all of a sudden it brings them into a very different relationship with that person than they've had before. Mm-hmm. And then we go back in 3 months and say, okay, of these things, how we doing, you know, and we check them off and whatever. And there might be something that takes longer. One place I worked, we had to get a taxonomy for files. I mean, just kill me. That is the most, but somebody's got to do it. And one of my staff members goes, I'll do it. And she did. And I really relieved her of doing other things to do that, because it helped the whole division. We all we all did better because of that work. So I was very pleased with that.
That's great. And what if you're walking into a team that they have not been satisfying the organization? They may think that they have been, but the senior leadership is feeling like they've not been on point. How do you wrestle the two of those things at the same time?
Well, you know, in healthcare, nobody puts you through the ringer in an interview process like they do in healthcare. You know, 30 people interview you or something. Yes. You pretty much pick up when you do that how people are feeling about the department you're about to take over, right? And so what I try to do is I go, I want to just test some things with you that I heard. Tell me if you think it's true. Was it this person? Was it the day I talked to this person? But I ask them to comment on things I've heard without saying, you know, who mentioned them or whatever.
Right.
But then I go back to, well, who are your strong relationships? What are they? One of the key findings I made at one of the places I worked, they didn't have direct contact with the physicians. And I'm like, you're marketing the physicians. How can you not have direct contact with them? You've got to know what's going on. And that had been the culture before I got there. So after that, I mean, they were attending divisional meetings and the docs knew my people knew the docs. And it made my people feel better about their jobs. They knew better content, right? They knew who to go to. They were able to solve problems, and it just enhanced their job satisfaction. Well, on the other hand, the doctors were loving it. They were getting attention that their vision wanted, and they had somebody they could call. And so it's a win-win, but that's a long process, and both sides have to be willing to invest the time and energy. And I've had some interesting conversations with both sides of that going, you know, Dr. So-and-so didn't think that meeting went real well. Let's talk about what we could have done differently, you know, or something like that. But I don't let it sit. If there's an issue, we deal with it quickly and then we move on. We just have to. We have too much stuff coming in all the time.
Yeah. And in that particular case, you were really busting a cultural barrier, right?
That was a tough one. But the thing was, when we finally had the conversation, that the doctors wanted it too.
Yes.
Nobody could understand why it was happening because both sides wanted it. So now we do in every division. So it's really a really good partnership going forward.
Yeah. Great. What's the magic of holding on to the uniqueness of each individual team member while you're building also a team cohort environment, something that looks and feels like it's in sync together, but we didn't. That's the one thing I think about the military is that they really mold everybody to be pretty much the same.
But they're all different.
Yes.
They're all different.
And I think, and particularly in your area, I think we benefit from allowing that uniqueness to
come out. Yeah. So I've done, it's called different things. One place it was called the Hitchcock Profiles, you know, Alfred Hitchcock. And I did a survey and I asked them, you know, if you could invite five people to dinner, who would it be? What's your favorite tribe? I mean, it was like 30 questions about them, you know, kind of thing. And then at the end, it was, tell me a secret that nobody here knows about you, right? And I kept it all confidential. And at each staff meeting, I'd release one of the secrets and people would go crazy trying to figure it out. So part of the group that is working on this now at Phoenix Children's, our culture club, there's a group that's looking at just social activities because we're hybrid, we're remote, and some are coming in 2 days, some aren't coming. So we're making a concerted effort to do that. There was also a desire for them to give back to the community. So we are doing five things in the community. We're packing food at a food pantry for Christmas, but we're also helping Meals on Wheels. They pick the projects they want to work on. And they do it on their own time. It's not on company time. You do it on your own time. And they really create opportunities for all of us to be together. We have a homeless youth program that we provide healthcare services to homeless teenagers in Phoenix. And we just gave them a ton of clothing that is no longer in brand. Well, we don't care if it's not in brand. They could just use some nice clothing. So our team went down and donated all of that to them. So there's different groups that look at ways to engage with each other, and everybody has to be on something. You know, they just have to pick one. And that way, The profiles tell me more about them when you hear their answers, and then what they pick tells you something about what they're interested in. And then how they come together, you start to get a really good picture of somebody, you know? And so it lends itself to a lot of great humor, good times. We have a guy who will die and be buried in a Dodgers uniform. We all know that. So when they went down, you know, he got sympathy cards and things like that. So you start to play on the differences, you know, it's really been good. I mean, I have to say that we've really come together despite this hybrid working situation, which is tough. It's tough for me. Yeah,
it sounds like it. And they've done it very creatively as well. And I'm assuming in a way that everybody is willing to do it, which is fabulous.
Yeah.
Experts will say that teams are more than the sum of their individual knowledge and talents. They have a collective intelligence as a body, the team itself. How do you see that play out?
Well, the shallow way to answer that, if I can say, is it's the same sense of feeling you get when you go into the office and everybody's there and they're having a good time. And that's when I go, okay, I'm buying lunch for everybody. And you just kind of feel it, you know, like everyone is happy to be there. They're wanting to talk. Well, then I'm going to splurge for lunch and I buy lunch for everybody. But the deeper conversation about that is so many of our projects, Allison, go across the enterprise, you know, so we've got to bring physicians and we got to bring ancillary services and you got to bring this one in and this one in. And nobody can keep all that in their head, you know. So I benefit when you bring them all in and you go, okay, physician relations, what do you think the reaction is going to be, or what are we missing here or something? Comms will say, well, let's make sure we get messages out on digi boards. You know, everybody has something. And once you get sort of that juices going of people thinking, then people are also really comfortable saying, you know, comms, maybe you should do this too, you know, or something like that. So you can just see that once people see how people are processing stuff, more comes out. Any leader who thinks they've figured it all out is fooling themselves, because you can't possibly keep it straight.
Yes, exactly. And so, you know, I was going to ask you about how do you ensure that they don't get insular to the broader organization, but I think you've identified the ways that you've done that, and particularly in the work that you do, which is...
We embed people, for example, in HR. They're the biggest producer of communications, right? And they would always give us stuff late. And finally, I said, we're putting a person in HR, okay? And I did this at Scripps Health, too. We had people in HR in the foundation to keep everyone on brand, on message, grammar, all that good stuff. They technically were my staff, but they sat there and they went to their meetings. All my marketing people sit on all the service line division meetings. So, yeah, I expect them to be out more than in, you know, and they are. And they are getting a kick out of it. They know people now, you know, and they're feeling like they're part of the clinical enterprise.
And so important that particularly, I think, those corporate functions, as we might call them, don't get so isolated and separated that people don't know who they are or what they do, or you sort of lose the pulse of the organization and what's happening because of that connection.
You know, one of the docs told me something very funny. Every doc I talked to at Phoenix Children's knew my videographer. And I'm like, really? That's who you know? They goes, well, yeah, we see Cabin everywhere. And it's true. He's all over the hospital. He's always shooting. And they're always going, Cabin, what are you working on? You know, and that's who they knew. And he's simply taking pictures. So I use Cabin to introduce the marketing team to the doctors because he knew them better than they did. And it really became kind of funny. So we just shot a bunch of videos with the same doctors. And so here we had Cabin was shooting it and the marketing people were giving them the script and everything. It was really kind of funny.
That's great. Yeah, that's great. You've been in lots of systems. You've done lots of leadership jobs in addition to all your consulting and everything. To somebody who's walking into a leadership position like yours for the first time, that needs to build a team. What's sort of your final thoughts or comments you would give to them?
Well, certainly listen twice as much as you talk. There's a lot of people that come in and tell people what they want or how they would like things. And once you say that, you've already cut down half the conversation they would have had with you, right? So you got to go in and listen, and you've got to be open to it. You know, if somebody says something that you really don't like, you need to say, well, that's very interesting. Let me take it under advisement or something. But you never discount anybody, because you got to start that environment of safety for the first time you meet them. First time they see you, they're sizing you up as the new person. And Can I trust her? Does she say what she's going to do or do what she says? You know, they're looking at all that. So I think it's critical that you sit down and you talk to them and you really listen to what they want, what they need, what's giving them friction, what gives them joy. Mm-hmm. You know, pretty soon you'll have a good analysis of what's happening in your department. And the other thing I learned in the pandemic was there's a lot of people who are taking care of multi-generations in their homes. Mm-hmm. And you don't know that until you start talking about either working from home or coming in. And I had one person say, I've got my grandmother living at our house and I can't be out and bringing. I said, so we made accommodations for them, you know. But that was a little bit of a surprise, but it wouldn't have even come out if we hadn't been in the middle of this pandemic and people said, I really have a personal situation I would like to talk to you about. And I said, absolutely.
Yeah.
So yeah. That was a surprise. I didn't know how many people were doing that.
Yeah. I mean, we're just a very evolving culture and mm-hmm. very evolving society. And, you know, old rules just have to be set aside and creating new ones, new ways of doing things, new ways of being, because the old just doesn't fit anymore.
And you know, the thing is, I at my age, you know, you don't want to date yourself on different things. I get to the point where I make it a joke. You know, it's like, okay, someone just gave me an Apple Watch. Is someone going to show me how to use it? You know, kind of thing. I mean, literally that happened. And they were saying, oh, come on. I said, well, just help me with it, you know, kind of thing. But they're so eager to learn. They tell me, we can do all that, Jean, but we need to understand how you think through processes with people that are difficult. That's the probably where I spend most of my time with them. Help me understand how to have a better relationship with this person, because they're my client and maybe it's not going wrong. So they appreciate when you bring years of experience of, well, I tried this and it worked, you could do that, or maybe you could do this. But there's some things that do go through the test of time, you know, that will stand up, but maybe you got to approach it a little differently. Email has been, oh my God, I have taught more people about the fact that you can't do humor in email. People read it the wrong way. And I know you're reading it and it doesn't look, but it's coming in the other way, you know? So it's been fun teaching them to like, read it, write it, read it again, and then send it, but don't just shoot it out. So Yeah.
And old fashioned being together in person or talking on the phone versus mm-hmm. doing everything in writing.
And we do have one rule. When I proposed it and I said, I don't know if you guys like it or not, but this has worked well for me. If you're past three emails, you pick up the phone.
Yes.
Don't get past three emails because you're going to lose it in translation. So that one we have adopted everywhere I've been. So yes. We do that.
Yeah. Great. Thank you, Jean. This has been so helpful. And I know our listeners will find it so as well. Really appreciate your time.
Oh, Allison, it's my pleasure. I so enjoy working with you and your team. And this has just been an honor for me to do. So thank you.
Oh, great. Thank you, Jean.